Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. Our guest this week is North Dakota Republican Senator John Hoeven, who joins us to talk about Republican agricultural priorities and the chances of passing a farm bill by the end of the month. But first, here's this week's headlines. Shoppers are paying more at the grocery store for meat, milk, and eggs. But the Consumer Price Index for food eaten at home stayed flat in August, due in part to lower prices for vegetables, grains, and baked goods. USDA's Economic Research Service projects the cost of groceries will rise by 1.2% this year, which is below the average increase for the past 20 years. Farmers fanned out across Capitol Hill this week to make a final appeal to lawmakers to pass a farm bill this year. The farmers wanted to send the message that they can't wait until 2025 for Congress to shore up farm bill commodity programs. But Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer told colleagues that it's time for Congress to pass another extension of the 2018 Farm Bill. And finally, Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump held their first debate this week, with the election now less than 2 months away. Both candidates spoke on a variety of topics, including abortion, immigration, and trade. Trump wants to impose across-the-board duties on American imports and raise tariffs by as much as 60% on Chinese products. Harris said Trump's tariffs would amount to a sales tax on the middle class, adding it would be a 20% tax on everyday goods you need to get through the month. Trump continues to insist that imposing new tariffs on imports won't mean higher prices for consumers. John Hoeven is a member of the Senate Ag Committee. We asked him about Trump's proposed tariffs and if farm groups are right to be concerned they could lead to another trade war.
Nobody does it better than our farmers and our ranchers. It benefits every single American every single day with the highest quality, lowest cost food supply in the world. But of course, we not only supply food for this great nation, we produce a lot more. And so we need foreign markets. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing for the United States because, you know, historically, we've always had a positive balance of trade in agriculture. And I believe we'll get back there. In terms of tariffs, remember, in terms of trade, you want free trade, but you want fair trade. You want fair trade. So when you talk about tariffs, you have to understand that there's a lot of different ways they can be used. If they're used to level the playing field so that our producers here at home, whether it's food or manufacturing or any other kind of goods, if we're forcing other countries to play fair, a level playing field, then that is an appropriate role. And actually not only helps us produce more here at home, whether it's manufacturing or anything else, but it enables us to export more in the long run because we're forcing our trading partners to play fair. And that's what you saw in Trump's first term with China, where he had China that, you know, are completely unfair trading relationship, not only monetary barriers, but non-monetary barriers as well, stealing our technology, all these other things. So the first go around, he put tariffs in place on China to force them to play fair. You saw them retaliate. I worked directly with Secretary of Ag Sonny Perdue and through the MFP, the Marketing Facilitation Program, which President Trump supported. That's how we put it in place. I worked with Sonny. We changed some things with the CCC so that as a result, working with USDA, we were able to keep our farmers and ranchers in the game and fight back. And ultimately, President Trump negotiated an agreement with China to buy a lot more both ag and non-ag products from us. And remember, we want to be a place that builds things, that produces things, and that manufactures things.
Let's stay on that topic. If tariffs are proposed, like the former president is suggesting, can farmers expect to see federal support from Congress?
Depending on what's actually done here, then we'd have to look at, okay, what else needs to be done so that, yeah, our farmers and ranchers have opportunity to produce and sell their products, not only here at home, but overseas. So depending on what gets implemented, there has to be more to the story, more steps to make sure that we're supporting our farmers and ranchers. We want to get to the point where we don't need tariffs because we force the other guys to play fair. In open markets, in fair markets, our guys win every time.
Let's go ahead and move to the election. Where do you think a Trump-Vance presidency could make the biggest difference in ag policy?
Well, I think President Trump, and I've spoken with him on it directly, he gets that our farmers and ranchers are the best in the world if they're given that opportunity. Okay, so you got to knock down things like Waters of the U.S. and all these ridiculous regulations, this new regulation now that if you work on a farm, you have to get paid for each different kind of job you do. So if you're driving the farm truck one day, you're fixing fence the next day, you're planting crop the next day, for each of those jobs, supposedly now you're supposed to get a different pay rate. Well, no farmer can figure out how he works with the people that he works with on the farm. Those are all different jobs. That's called farming. Okay. So this regulatory burden, it's killing our farmers, right? And then the associated costs that go with it, higher taxes, farming, small business. I mean, they're small business people. So higher taxes, higher regulation hurts our farmers badly. And that's where, you know, you've seen with the Biden-Harris administration and you would see with the Harris-Walz administration, same thing, higher taxes and a lot of regulations that really hurts our farmers and ranchers. Obviously, with Trump bench, you're going to see less taxes, less regulation. We're going to produce a lot more ag goods, a lot more energy, and a lot more of everything else, too, which will bring down inflation for hardworking Americans.
We'll be right back with more from Senator John Hoeven right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. Leaders of the House and Senate Ag Committees are working to try and get a farm bill done before the end of the month. We asked Senator Hoeven if that's possible with the lack of progress so far.
Look, in a nutshell, we have to come to an agreement on a bipartisan basis to update reference prices, okay? Our farmers manage risk. Look, they don't control the weather. They don't control markets. They don't control prices. They have no control over those things. The only way that they can stay in the game long term is if they can manage risk, and they have two key tools to do that. One is crop insurance. My farmer bill lays out the right track for that. I think we'll get that in the farm bill. It makes crop insurance more affordable across the whole gamut of a very diverse ag industry in this country. So crop insurance. And the other is the countercyclical safety net, ARC and PLC. And the reference prices there must be updated. I'm going to repeat that. We've got to update reference prices for ARC and PLC to have a relevant farm bill. And those, you need both those tools working together for our farmers and ranchers to manage risk. And I think if we could get bipartisan agreement on updating those reference prices, that farm bill would come together very fast. We could lay the foundation in September and have it passed before the end of the year.
That memo also notes that farmers are asking Congress to pass a 2-year package of supplemental assistance for growers if the bill doesn't get passed in time. What are the prospects for some kind of aid package for farmers if you can't get a bill done?
Yeah, and that is something that we are having to look at now because the farm bill isn't done. And there's two different tracks on that that we're looking at. One is I intend to talk to Secretary Vilsack about it here. And that is that USDA does have money that some of which I think could be used for an emergency type assistance package. And the other is because of the forest fires and some of those, you know, serious problems, there likely will be an emergency package, I think, before the end of the year. And that would be another opportunity to include something for ag. But of course, ultimately, the best solution is to get that farm bill done.
Republicans do have a fairly decent chance of winning the Senate after this election is finished. Do you think you can get a better farm bill done next year as opposed to now?
Well, I think we can get the farm bill done that we need if Republicans get control of the Senate. I think we can get the farm bill we need next year. And that's the point I'm trying to make about this year. We want to get it done this year, but we've got to get a farm bill that does the job. And if you don't update reference prices and make sure that the countercyclical safety net and crop insurance are there the way they need to be there for our farmers the next 5 years, it doesn't work to pass a farm bill because it won't get the job done.
One last question before we wrap. I know the election's coming up. What are you hearing from farmers and producers in your state that is the most important issues to them when it comes to agriculture ahead of November?
Yeah, it's the farm bill, right? And other parts of the country have seen more stress than we have. We grow in North Dakota north of 40 different crops where we're like the top producer or one of the very top producers in the country. So we're very diversified. And we have both crop and animal agriculture. That's helped us get through this stretch better than some of the other parts of the country. But we're hearing it now from our guys, too, whether it's, you know, corn, beans, wheat. We're hearing the real impacts now. So, you know, right up front there, it's the farm bill. And then followed by inflation hitting all our input costs is really a problem, particularly with declining commodity prices.
Well, Senator Hovind, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Andrew. Good to be with you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson has a deeper look on regional differences in the USDA's net farm income forecast in this week's Map It Out.
The most recent net farm income forecast released by USDA forecasts a 7% decline this year to $140 billion. However, some regions are going to be impacted worse or better than the USDA number shows, depending on what their farmers produce. USDA economists divide the country into 9 agricultural regions. 6 of these are expected to see lower average net farm income in 2024 compared with 2023. 3 regions will see a slight increase. Wisconsin, Michigan, and states in the Northeast, a region with a lot of dairy farmers, is expected to see a 4% increase in net farm income. Farmers in the Heartland region, the nation's Corn Belt, will see the biggest declines in farm profits. Farmers are expected to earn $33,700 less this year than last, a nearly 23% drop. Farmers in the Mississippi Portal and on the Northern Great Plains are expected to make 21% and 13% less this year, respectively. The regional income differences reflect the heavy geographic concentration of production specialties, like corn and soybeans in the Midwest, for example. Areas with more fruit, vegetable, and livestock production, including California and the Northeast, are less affected by the downturn in markets for row crops like corn, soybeans, wheat, and cotton. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is going to be focused on the National Farmer and Producer Fly-ins this week here in D.C. We're joined by Amy France with the National Sorghum Producers and Ronnie Russell with the American Soybean Association. Thank you guys both for joining us today. And I wanted to start off just with some of the most important messages that you guys had for lawmakers this week. What were they and how were they received by lawmakers? Go ahead if you'd like to start, Amy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did a fantastic job in the task put at hand. And one thing we know about farmers is you give them a job, they're going to get it done and they're going to do it well. And we saw all farmers from different commodities come together this week, do the job. The job's not complete, but I think we can see in that memo to ranking member Scott that we made a difference and an impact. And I'm thrilled to see what we accomplished.
Ronnie, you sir as well?
I agree with what she just said too. It's really been a monumental past 2 days, because I've been here in Washington many times advocating for agriculture, but this is the first time that I have seen so many different commodities come together for one cause. And we know what that is. It's trying to get a farm bill achieved as soon as possible. And I think that we really were very impactful to the people that we got to speak to up to 100 different representatives, both on the Senate side and the House side.
And I want to talk a little bit about the Farm Bill, something that's very important here as we're wrapping up this last little session. A two-parter here, and Ronnie, I want to start with you first. Did lawmakers tell you anything about getting this Farm Bill passed by the end of this month? And then if this bill doesn't get passed in time, what does that mean for your fellow farmers and producers?
Sure. I mean, we're extremely hopeful as a group on this fly-in that we've been visiting with our representatives. Maybe a little less optimistic. They understand the importance of getting this done. And again, like I said a while ago, I think it was very impactful for what we had to say to them. There has been some comments thinking that it may be in a lame duck session is the real opportunity for this to happen. But we still enforced upon them and told them the importance that we don't want an extension on the current Farm Bill. We need a new and improved Farm Bill. And so that's what we focused on. And like I said, we're very hopeful, but it looked like it may be more in a lame duck session.
Absolutely. Yeah, we heard very similar comments. And, you know, you asked, what does that look like if this doesn't get accomplished? And our message to the lawmakers were, you think you have a problem passing a Farm Bill now, and we have hurting in the rural counties and across the U.S., wait to see what that rural economy looks like if this doesn't get done. You certainly hate to be the one to pull the alarm, but the alarm is sounding in the rural communities, and so we need to get something done. I had a staff say, well, my crystal ball, you know, I can't really see, and he said, maybe spring, and I said, I'm throwing that crystal ball out the window. We won't have it. We've got to get something done.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. Former President Trump has reiterated his plan to impose tariffs on imported goods from China. Ag groups have told us that makes them concerned about another trade war. Missouri farmer and American Soybean Association director Ronnie Russell says discussion about a trade war puts focus on the need for a new farm bill to have better support for farmers.
I want to emphasize that is the need for the new and improved farm bill. Because I lived through that period of time you're talking about with our previous administration and the trade war with China. Fortunately, we did have some ad hoc payments that came through. The market facilitation program was very, very helpful and beneficial for those in agriculture. But again, that's the reason why we need a new improved, because our ARC and PLC programs, they didn't strike at that time. And that's the reason why we need the new and improved in the new Farm Bill. So there is some concern, but hopefully we'll be able to get the Farm Bill moved forward and have some protection against that.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely see China for sorghum as our big buyer, but we've been very diligent in searching out other markets, sending trade missions out. So we're working in the backside of those things, but we're hopeful, and we know that talk is talk, but action happens behind closed doors, and we feel very comfortable in our relationships in China right now that we're still going to be okay, but certainly on the forefront of conversations.
And one last question about the election, Amy. I'm going to come to you first on this one. We're less than 2 months away from the election. It's going to be here before we know it. So what are some of the most important things on rural voters' minds as we head into that?
I think recognition of what rural America does for our country. You know, we obviously are coming together in a bipartisan, or hopefully a bipartisan way, on this Farm Bill, but really stressing the importance of what agriculture does for the American family, not just my farm family, but the American families as a whole. We got a glimpse of what that looked like in COVID when things were shut down, and I think people realized where their food comes from. And so having a president that recognizes that is very important to rural America. Obviously, we have lots of other small things, but we've got to get somebody that recognizes the importance of agriculture for America.
Rural America is sustained by agriculture. They're the driving force behind it. They're the lifeblood of rural agriculture. Those dollars that agriculture generates, those new dollars that are generated by agriculture, support our schools, support our local farm markets, our agribusinesses. And when we have a strong farm economy, we got a strong rural America. So your question is what is some of the talk about when it comes to the election? We need somebody who's going to help us with interest rates. We need some trade negotiations with other countries to help move our products and support agriculture. So that's what we're looking for.
I guess wrapping up, one final question. I'll start with you first, Ronnie. Week's ending now. You guys had a chance to be here, got to relay messages from farmers and producers. Anything that you want them to know, any final words from you guys as you head back home and can relay what kind of went on during this week, if you
yes, and I'll say to your viewers the same thing that I told when I left each of our offices the past 2 days. If there's any one thing that I want them to remember, it's the urgency of this. Rural America and agriculture is in dire straits again. I lived through the 1980s, and I'm sure some of your viewers know what I'm talking about. Very difficult times, and we are on the verge of being in that same kind of time frame again. So the urgency of not stalling out, looking that this is a necessity that needs to be done, and let's get some kind of a bipartisan agreement going so that we can get this farm bill accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Ronnie. I think the thing that I was just very proud of the commodity groups, of course, we could sit here and bicker the details of what we individual commodity groups want in that farm bill, but we set those aside. We came together for a unified voice for agriculture to get something done. And we just asked our members that we spoke to this week saying, hey, we want you to do the same thing, work across the aisle and chamber to chamber. Let's get something done to save rural America. As you said, it all bleeds into one another. Agriculture is weaved into everything we do. Certainly a sense of urgency, but very proud of the work that we came together as commodity groups to do. And I hope we can set an example for Congress.
Certainly a very important week for commodity groups and for farmers, just a very important time as we move closer to the end of this month, farm bill negotiations and the election coming up. Amy, Ronnie, thank you guys both for joining us.
You bet.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, star Lydia Johnson explains what groups are most affected by rising food insecurity rates in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA data shows food insecurity in the United States is rising. Food insecurity is defined as when a household cannot get enough food due to a lack of money or other resources. This chart shows a percentage of households across the country experiencing food insecurity from 2019 to 2023. You can see the numbers are roughly around 10% from 2019 to 2021, but then began to climb. 12.8% of households were food insecure in 2022. That went up to 13.5% in 2023, which means nearly 18 million households experienced food insecurity at some point during the year. Several different groups had higher food insecurity in 2023 compared to 2022, including households without kids, households with more than one adult, and households in both metropolitan and suburban areas. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for a busy upcoming week. Both chambers of Congress will remain in session. They'll be in session for only two more weeks before breaking for the November election. Also, Monday is our Ag Outlook Forum from Kansas City, Missouri. The event will feature top economic, policy, business, and government officials with their perspective on current agribusiness challenges. Be sure to check out our website for the annual CEO salary report. Our team used IRS 990 reports to compile salaries for over 150 executives for agricultural and food organizations, environmental advocates, and sectors such as banking, energy, and agricultural inputs. Our analysis shows a median salary of $460,000. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Honecke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.